Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. Co-host Joe with you all here this weekend. Always happy to be here with you all, even if it sounds like I'm losing my voice. I don't know. Seasons are changing and all that. I think I mentioned that on the program before. Anyway, Silk or Joe Show comes to you courtesy of the Main Street Radio Network. So I want to thank the Main Street Radio Network for this. We have been around now almost 12 years. We are almost going into our 13th year. Lucky number 13. We're just a few short weeks away from being in our 13th year. And it's all thanks to you listeners out there and the support you give us. So we appreciate that. And you can show some of that appreciation back if you want to go to mainstreetradionetwork.com. They got a contact page. You can contact us through that. You can also check out podcasts for the program. And while you're up there, check out the Al Nathan Show. Sometimes I guest host for him. I did so earlier this week. Always a blast to do so. And you can also find information about both the programs up there at mainstreetradionetwork.com. And you can find us on social media as well. On Main Street Radio Network's Facebook page, you can find us at Wimkin on Main Street Radio Network's page there. You can find us on X at Main Street Radio, or sometimes on Getter, GETTR.com, at Silk or Joe Show, when and if I remember to update that particular page. So actually, you know, really, if you want to keep a update on these appearances of mine on the Al Nathan Show, it's best you just follow X at Main Street Radio or X at Alan Nathan. And because Getter is a little bit iffy as to if you'll get a timely update, because I got all so much other stuff going on. But anyway, at least you know one thing, that you can always catch this show at noon on Saturdays or on our website on the podcast page. So there's always a sort of permanent area for that. And you always know the great content of the show, that's going to be something topical, something political. And we've got plenty of that for you today. Right now, for example, the good old Democrats, they're I talked earlier this week about how this J. Jones, Democrat Attorney General candidate in the state of Virginia, is sort of indicative of where the Democrat Party at large stands. Because, well, they're supporting him and everything he said, despite what he said. He came out, there's some text messages released from 3 years ago that showed him wishing for death on a fellow state legislature who happened to be a Republican, because that Republican decided to show an act of bipartisanship and compassion and attend the funeral of a Democrat. So, because of that act of compassion, Jay Jones, the Democratic Attorney General candidate, wants to murder the dude. Texted fantasies about shooting him, and then also wanted to kill his children. And he wanted to, and the reason that he wanted the children to die was so that the mother could feel the grief and suddenly become an advocate for Democrat policies on, I guess, gun violence or whatever the issue du jour was at the time. So, that is the Democrat. And Jay Jones, what did he do? And when those text messages came to light, first he kind of supported them, and then he stepped back and said, "Oh, I'm disgusted by those remarks," as if he didn't actually say them. He didn't say, "I wrote them and I'm disgusted by them." He didn't say, "I'm disgusted by what I said." He said, "I'm disgusted by those remarks," as if a Republican had written them or something, someone who was not him 3 years ago. And again, I emphasize that it's just 3 years ago. He's an adult. He's a fully grown adult. It's not like you can go and say, "Oh yeah, I was just a kid at the time." No, this was not that long ago. Can't you do that, Dodge? And then what does he do? He says, "Now I take full accountability for them." And the Democrat Party says, "Oh, he takes full accountability." Well, what does accountability look like? As said before, the Young Republicans National Federation, that shows you what accountability for this kind of thing looked like, where they just bounced out of some members who were caught, just nine of them, who were caught in this texting ring that was saying, I don't know if everything was exactly on the level of Jay Jones that was as threatening, but they rightfully got bounced out anyway for the remarks that they said. And that is what accountability looks like, but that didn't happen to Jay Jones. They stuck by him. In fact, the Democrat governor candidate for the state of Virginia, she was asked multiple times at a debate whether or not she would still continue supporting him, and all she said was, "I'll let the voters decide." And, oh, great, so you don't care. that was the best answer we got out of them. So the problem with the Democrat Party has is that this rhetoric this guy was using it's kind of par for the course. I mean, let's get to the death threats thing, for example, against the center. I mean, against the fellow Republican. I mean, come on. We've had, after Charlie Kirk's assassination, there was this website that was dedicated to tracking people who supported the assassination of Charlie Kirk, and they had 50,000 people reported to them before they got shut down by hackers. I think that's an indication of where the Democrat base is. Not only that, but the poll came out showing that in Virginia, 93% of Democrats had no problem with what Jay Jones said. And I know I'm reiterating information here, but we do have some new stuff coming in. Texas Democrat State Representative Jelonda Jones said she will slash Republicans across the throat if they bully her. I think that's a little menacing. And that was on CNN, where she made the threat to slash Republicans' throats. Didn't care. So Democrats are still making threats, but I mean, we've played clip after clip after clip after clip after clip of them making violent threats and all for years now. Mm-hmm. Violence just seems to be their way of life. And at this point, actually, we can tie into another thing that Jay Jones said about making people suffer in order to get liberal policies. And, you know, the sick thing about it is it kind of indicates how liberals do it. They create chaos so that you will want their policy as the solution to the very chaos that they themselves created. And you have a top Democrat in the House who came out and admitted as much, House Minority Whip Catherine Clark. She was in an interview with Fox News Congress reporter Chad Pergram. She said that they want the shutdown because families will suffer, and that's what they need. They need families to suffer because of the shutdown Democrats are imposing because, quote, it is one of the few leverage times we have, unquote. So Democrats know that this shutdown is futile. They want families to suffer, though. That's the whole point of it, to make people suffer so that people will start blaming Republicans and blame Trump and agree with the Democrats on their issues. Again, few leverage times we have, making people suffer. That just seems to be what the Democrat Party has turned to now. And I mean, we see that reflected kind of in their cities, too, don't we? And, ooh, Jay Jones, that's right. That's another thing, too, about him that is indicative of this, right? So another thing that he has been advocating for in the past is removing school resource officers. And that is, you know, any armed guards and police presence at schools. He doesn't want them there. He wants them gone. He wants schools to be gun-free zones with no police presence whatsoever. Now, if you'll recall, we've had multiple mass shooters in the past who said that they picked schools because they were gun-free zones, or they picked whatever zone they went to shoot up because it is a gun-free zone. So now you have this Democrat candidate who wanted his opponent's children to be murdered in order for the opponent to understand his view on gun control. He's now setting up schools so that children can be slaughtered so that parents will want gun control. And he's going to be the attorney general candidate, and Democrats have no problem with this idea, this thinking by him, that if we as Democrats shatter the system and create chaos, then the people will buy us as the solution. And again, it seems to be the party at large that's doing it, because Lord knows that Jay Jones isn't the only one who has these fantasies about gun control policy and how to get it. Democrats do that in a lot of places, where they create gun-free zones around schools, then, sure enough, a mass shooting happens, and then they come out saying, well, the solution is gun control, not the fact that we just left the schools exposed. And speaking of exposing, what exposes the Democrats' hypocritical reasoning on this, what exposes that they know what the truth is about this, that they know they are doing wrong, that they aren't just idiots implementing bad policy decisions on the basis of assuming all humans are good or something. No. What exposes Democrats for this is the fact that they themselves have armed guards. Do you hear any Democrats in Congress, at the state legislature level, anywhere in the country where they have power, do you hear any of them saying, we need to remove protections for ourselves, we need to remove armed guards for ourselves? Hell no. As a matter of fact, you might recall it was Minneapolis back during the Black Lives Matter riots in 2020, where the city council, when they voted to defund the police, at the same time, they voted to increase funding for security for themselves, because they knew what would happen when they defunded the police. They themselves would be in further danger, so they gave themselves armed guards, using the same money that should have gone to the police, probably. So that, again, Democrats know the value of armed guards. I mean, gee whiz, you remember right after the January 6th riots, the Democrats, when they were saying that it wasn't a, you know, false flag or anything like that, when they were saying, oh, it's these evil conservatives, what did they do? They erected barriers around the Capitol. They brought in the National Guard to protect the Capitol. They had machine gun nests set up. That's what Democrats did. And now they're saying, oh, the National Guard, you can't do that to bring down crime in cities. But here they are setting up the National Guard and barriers to protect themselves, which they won't do for schools. They want schools to have the opposite. They want schools to have no protections. Why? Well, Jay Jones probably seems to indicate that. They want that because they want someone to suffer so that the voters will pick their policy decisions. And House Minority Whip Catherine Clark, she gave the game away about the government shutdown. It's the same damn thing. They want you to suffer so that eventually you agree with whatever the hell that they want. And actually, I think it was Victor Davis Hanson who said that that's kind of what the 2020 riots were about, making people suffer until eventually they just, to end the chaos, they just went along with the Democrats. That's all the party has at this point. That's their policy. More Silver Joe Show after this break.
Does your digital life feel more like a junk drawer than a tidy desk? Whether it's updating passwords or organizing digital files, Tom Camber, Executive Director of Senior Planet from AARP, has tips for getting your digital house in order.
We all have organizing projects that we put off, and that's just as true in our online lives as in our homes. In a recent survey, more than half of people over 50 say they are having trouble managing and organizing their digital information.
To help reverse the trend, Senior Planet is launching the 2025 Digital House Cleaning Challenge.
Think of it like spring cleaning, but for your digital life. Senior Planet's 5-day Digital House Cleaning Challenge helps you tackle your privacy settings, password managers, file storage, and more with simple step-by-step tips. We've broken it down into one easy checklist. It's free, it's practical, and it gives you control over your digital life.
To join the challenge, visit seniorplanet.org/digital-house-cleaning. SUVs are, without question, the most popular vehicle choice in the United States. But with so many models available, it can be difficult to know which one would be best for you. Kia America's James Bell has more.
People often think SUVs and crossovers are the same, but they're not. Traditional SUVs are built on truck platforms and are designed for towing and more off-roading exercises. Crossovers, on the other hand, share more with cars, which means better fuel economy and a smoother ride. The decision really comes down to the lifestyle and how you plan to use your next vehicle.
What might surprise you is that SUVs are not limited to gas engines. Hybrid and plug-in hybrid options are widely available. The Kia Sportage, for example, comes in gas, hybrid, and plug-in hybrid, giving drivers great choices for how they plan to travel.
There's no one-size-fits-all SUV, but almost all are built for adventure. And the trick is finding the one that amplifies your lifestyle and your passengers.
To learn more about the latest SUVs and crossovers, visit Kia.com.
I first want to underscore that Hispanics may be getting the disease younger and may be more at risk, so it's important to be aware of this. Having of course, a history of a Parkinson's in the family, but having chronic constipation, whether in yourself or in your family, also chronic depression yourself or a family, then having smell loss, and also having a long-stander, what we call REM sleep behavior. That is when you act out in your dreams, you act out in your sleep, you talk in your sleep, you may sleepwalk. All these are apparently risk factors that contribute to perhaps having a greater incidence or chance of developing Parkinson's. You can go to the michaeljfox.org/PPMI to find out more so that we can make bigger strides. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence, Join PVA in fighting for theirs at PVA.org.
Welcome back to the Silver Joe Show. My co-host Joe with you all here today. And we are joined now for a segment by Chris Hoare. He is a seasoned entrepreneur with a career spanning tech, satellite communications, and emerging technologies. I was ramming those words together to create the word emergency. Emerging technologies in England and America. He is a disaster response and telecom national security spokesperson for SAT-123. So I guess emergency technologies would be adequate for describing some of what he does. But Chris Hoare, appreciate you being on the show. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Yep, glad to have you. So I guess we did have our own technological emergency earlier this week where Amazon, they just had some minor glitch in the system, which ended up crashing the gaming and government websites, accounting business websites, all sorts of websites across the globe. What happened?
Yeah, so basically there was a failure at the AWS Amazon Web Services US East 1 geographical location where they have around 75 data centers. And Amazon Web Services, everyone's heard of Amazon, of course, for getting their shopping needs delivered on time and cheap, but Amazon's business extends far beyond that. Amazon Web Services controls about 37% of the world's cloud data storage market, and that's obviously a sizable chunk. And when something goes wrong there, unfortunately, the ripple effects can be felt around the world.
Wow, yeah. And people just don't really realize how easy it is to bring down stuff in the cloud. Of course, I got everything stored on external hard drives, so I'm going to end up being buried alive by them one day. But as far as the cloud goes, you know, if something goes wrong, as we saw with Amazon, suddenly you lose access to all of your data through no fault of your own, through nothing that you could even have possibly had anything to do with. And in some cases, that data might be irrecoverable.
Yeah, I mean, there is certainly risks involved in storing things somewhere else, like on the cloud. But it's not just storage. It's the way that websites work. One of the main causes of this, according to Amazon, seems to be a failure of the DNS part of their DynamoDB service. And DNS essentially maps domain names to IP addresses. So when you type in a domain name, it actually has to be translated to an IP address to show the website. So if that little part of the equation goes down, then the website basically cannot be shown and cannot be retrieved. And that's kind of one of the core problems that we saw on Monday. And those problems extended for about 24 hours in some cases. But ripple effects were felt around the world. Over 7,500 government agencies, U.S. government agencies, rely upon AWS, as do many banks. It's not just, I know a lot of people were had their Alexa system go down, and one of the big searches on Google was, how do I turn my lights on without Alexa, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, and also Amazon has the systems that, you know, the Ring doorbells. I remember that the Ring systems went out too for people's houses. And I guess if you have your electronic lock on the front door through Amazon, suddenly you can't get through to your house. So it's really scary just how everyone relies on Amazon to enter their house, to turn their lights on, how the government relies on it for whatever these government agencies relied on it for. It wasn't just in the U.S. either. I remember reading United Kingdom websites, government websites went down too. And all of that just because of someone forgot to tell a web address where the IP address was, or vice versa.
Yeah, I mean, they said it was a failure in their DynamoDB service. Other people are skeptical, saying this could have been a cyber attack. But my point is whether or not this was a software update issue or it was a cyber attack, you know, what it does show is how vulnerable we are. You know, if I'm one of our enemies looking at this, I'm going to be, you know, they are paying attention, especially in the middle of a government shutdown. You know, this shows the big vulnerability that we have. And it really points to what's a greater problem, that we have a lot of eggs in one basket here, and we probably need to diversify our storage and data needs for more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned that the Amazon Web Services, they have 37% of cloud storage. So are there any other major conglomerates with web storage who are perhaps just as vulnerable as Amazon but haven't yet been taken advantage of?
Well, we saw problems in the last year with CrowdStrike. We've seen other the solar winds attacks and so on. I mean, the real issue is that there's most of the world's cloud storage and cloud compute is concentrated amongst four or five companies at max. And, you know, that gives us single points of failure. And so we have the same problem with the power grid. You know, if it's attacked in one place, it can take out a whole city. You know, so the real issue here is that we are not distributed enough and we don't have enough redundancy in our networks.
Now, is this just a failing of how the technology has evolved over the years, or is this just big corporations taking advantage of the fact that they have all the toys and no one else does?
Well, in my opinion, it's we have too much of a monopoly on these kind of markets. That's just my opinion. You know, if we had this kind of cloud compute power across more companies, I think we might be a little less prone to this. But look, Amazon has done a great job in providing the service and rolling up the market share. But along with that comes the problem that we are completely reliant on them for so many vital services. You know, in the 7,500 government agencies plus, according to Amazon, but it's beyond that, it's banking systems, airlines, air traffic control, and so on. So there's a lot of things there that relate directly to national security. And right now, with the government shutdown and CSER, our first line of federal defense against cyber attacks, also has a lot of people furloughed. So we are very vulnerable, unfortunately.
Mm. And I have to imagine that there's hospital systems, too. And, you know, there's talk about involving AI more in hospital systems. I can only imagine that means more cloud storage usage, just because, you know, you can't be shipping flash drives from hospital to hospital overnight. So that indicates that in the future, as we become more dependent on this sort of thing, will the lessons be learned from today, or will we just be blindly walking down this alley and hoping for the best?
Well, I think, you know, part of the problem, in my opinion, is that these companies are very wealthy, very powerful, and you know, they write legislation that favors them. It doesn't favor more competition. But again, I think it really is a national security issue. You know, we need to be more diversified. You know, it's the same thing with your stock portfolio, that you shouldn't put all your money in one stock, and we shouldn't put all of our trust in one company, you know, no matter how much of a good job they're doing or not, because we are vulnerable. And our enemies around the world spend a lot of time and money every single day trying to attack our infrastructure, steal our data. You know, they launch ransomware attacks continuously. There are millions of cyber attacks every day around the world, and that number is only going to increase.
And it only takes one employee clicking on an email or one person entering a zero where it should have been a one, and everything comes crashing down.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And look, if we think it can't happen here, I just point to what happened in Spain earlier this year, where the power grid became all the power was basically sent to one place, and it took the power grid offline throughout the whole country. The Spanish authorities claimed that that was an error. It looked much more like a cyber attack to me, but either way, they were without power throughout the country and without internet communications for over 24 hours, and that causes a lot of problems. And if it can happen to them, it can certainly happen here.
Indeed, and that's a scary thought that there might not be changes just because of how big and entrenched the folks in charge are. But Let's get that. We don't have that much time left, so could you tell our listeners a little bit about SAT123?
Yeah, it's sat123.com. We provide a redundant satellite system, satellite phones, satellite internet, and then we also provide solar power portable generators. You know, our customers know that these networks are vulnerable, and if you can't live without communication, you can't live without internet, then you need a redundant system that won't be affected by these kind of outages or attacks.
All right. Well, Chris Hoare, appreciate you being on the Silk or Joe show to talk about this. And listeners, we've got more programming coming up after this break, so stick with us.
Obesity affects more than 40% of American adults, yet too often people are left without access to the support they need due to high costs, outdated one-size-fits-all treatments, or long wait times to see a specialist. Obesity medicine specialist and the head of weight loss at Hims & Hers, Dr. Craig Premack, explains.
The average wait time to see an obesity specialist in the U.S. is about 5 months. Through Hims & Hers, customers typically have their intake reviewed by a licensed provider in about 3 hours. A new analysis shows that customers accessing personalized GLP-1 treatment plans through Hims & Hers lost an average of 20 pounds, or 10% of their body weight, in 6 months. 75% of customers stayed on treatment after 6 months, far exceeding typical dropout rates. With a personalized approach and support across nutrition, movement, and mental health, and 24/7 access to a dedicated care team, the result is a comprehensive care experience that helps people succeed and build healthier lives for the long term.
To get started, visit forhers.com or hims.com.
While the number of highway rail crossing collisions, deaths, and injuries have dropped over the past five decades, every 3 hours in the U.S., a person or vehicle is involved in a train collision. September 15th to 21st is National SeaTrax Think Train Week. John Phleps, Norfolk Southern Chief Safety Officer.
Every safe choice around train tracks is a powerful one. This week shines a spotlight on the importance of staying alert and making smart decisions near train tracks. Trains are faster and quieter than most people realize, and they can take more than a mile to come to a complete stop. That's why it's critical to stay off tracks unless you're at a designated crossing. At crossings, always look and listen for trains and make sure you have a clear view in both directions before proceeding. Safety is a core value and the foundation of everything we do at Norfolk Southern, but safety isn't just our responsibility, it is everyone's. You have more power than the train to stop a crash before it happens by always making safe choices around tracks.
Visit norfolksouthern.com/railsafety to learn more.
As students settle into the new school year, experts warn about a danger that's often overlooked: human trafficking. While many think it only happens abroad, trafficking can happen in any community, and young people are especially vulnerable during times of transition, like the start of school. Erica Reed with the Department of Homeland Security's Blue Campaign says adults need to know the signs.
Traffickers often build trust by posing as a mentor or friends. Any sudden change in behavior, like isolation or secretive relationships, can be a warning sign.
But knowing the signs is only part of the solution. Reed says starting a conversation early can make all the difference.
It's important to know that just a simple check-in with the young people in your life can open the doors to trust, and that simple act can prevent exploitation before it ever begins. Be the adult that notices.
To learn how to recognize the signs and help protect students this school year, visit dhs.gov/bluecampaign.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silver Joe Show. Everybody, co-host Joe with y'all here today. And just putting a fire point on something I said in the opening segment, something I said what the opening segment was about Democrats wanting you to suffer and inflicting that suffering on you knowingly so that you will turn to them for policy solutions. I will point out again about who was the direct cause of the financial crisis in 2008. It was that both sides played a part in the lead up to it. And we're actually on the precipice of another such disaster because banks just got smarter about not doing the stuff about doing the stuff that they were doing in the lead up to 2008. Like back then, banks were, what was it, directly being mismanaging your money or whatever. And but today, it is, in fact, they are using shadowy secondary third parties to mess up with your money. But anyway, just something to keep an eye out on. But the main point that I bring up, though, is Democrats themselves were the ones who passed legislation that would kind of trigger what eventually became the financial the collapse of the financial market, I should say. I'm not talking about the repeal of Glass-Steagall. That was bipartisan under Bill Clinton. But I'm talking about more direct about mandating banks take on bad loans and stuff like that in the name of fighting racism. And also the fact that George Bush, it was either 17 or 19 times that George W. Bush begged the Democrats who controlled Congress to pass some kind of legislation to stop the financial crisis, and they refused. They let it happen. They blamed the Republicans. Obama soared into the White House on the wings of the disaster that the Democrats created and then refused to stop. So they do, in fact, understand that inflicting suffering on you and then saying that they're the only solution gets them into office. I mean, we saw that kind of with Joe Biden. That was their strategy with him. Of course, there was a lot of mail-in voting fraud and other sites of voting fraud that happened during 2020. But one of the arguments Biden made was that the rioting would stop as soon as Democrats took power again. And that seems to be the case with the rioting that they're doing right now, the anti-ICE riots and all that. But anyway, so they're not above inflicting suffering to advance their policy goals, and they have done so in the past plenty of times. So should we really be surprised by folks like Jay Jones, who just come out and say, openly admit in the text messages, this is how I feel, when the party acts the same way? Or the House Minority Whip, who goes on to CNN and says, or no, who, it was actually a Fox News reporter she was talking to, who admits much the same thing. CNN was where the Democrat state Texas representative was that threatened to slash the throats of Republicans. Anyway, moving on, though, speaking of other people who want to slash throats, let's talk about that No Kings protest we had last weekend. Of course, I couldn't talk about it last weekend because it was just like hadn't happened yet by the time this aired, or it was just beginning to start. There was no information or data with which to discuss it. But now we have some. And my local news, though, I remember they ran cover for the protest. They ignored the threats that were made against conservatives. They ignored liberals committing violence against counter-protesters. There were multiple instances of that. Instead, my local news focused on probably the lone incident where a possible conservative tried to grab an American flag held by a No Kings protester. Now, reporter Savannah Hernandez, she was on Fox News' Jesse Waters Primetime, and she noted that there were two factions to the protests. One faction is probably the old folks, programmed by the local news coverage of such events as I just described, CNN watchers, the dedicated core who still watch, perhaps a dedicated core who still watch Jimmy Kimmel because, you know, they watched Johnny Carson back in 1975, and it was good enough for them then. His late night stuff is good enough now for them, right? Old habits hadn't died off yet. But they have no idea what a fascism is or why they're there. You see these man-on-the-street interviews at the No Kings protest talking to them. They can't name anything bad that Trump has actually done. They just recite the mantras. Really, it seems like a failing on the parts of the organizers because we've seen it before where they hand out talking points to everybody. I think someone would have been nice enough to do that for the old fogies who showed up. But they have no idea what they're there for. But then there's this other faction there who's there to advocate for violence against political opponents, and the old folks seem to have no problem with that. Both sides coexist at these functions. It's what we saw during the BLM riots. Peaceful, regular folks by day, but then after hours, the radicals would team up with the criminals to tear the city down. Now, Savannah Hernandez, she was in New York City, and at her protest, she saw the thousands of people in the crowd just kind of disappeared after 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So, pretty much, If you went to the protest at the beginning of the show I was doing on Saturday, you would have seen a crowd. By the end of the show, the crowd would have been gone. Maybe they all realized that it was time to go listen to the Silker Joe show, or the new one had been posted on MainStreetMediaNetwork.com. They had to go home to listen to the podcast. Anyway, other people have noticed this too at other protests, courtesy of CNN's coverage, where at 2:34 p.m. they were noting how much of the crowd is gone. And actually, Fox News' Jesse Waters pointed to AstroTurf, though others noted that given the large elderly population attending, they probably just reached their endurance limit or it was getting too close to that 4 p.m. dinner time. There is evidence for both. Crowds on Demand CEO Adam Swart said back in April that demand for his services was just incredible under the Democrats now. And this is, as the minority whip in the House said, to paraphrase her, this is just one of the few leverage times that they have. They don't have the House. They don't have the Senate. They don't have the presidency. They don't have a majority of the governors, a majority of the state legislators. They don't have anything like that. All that they can do is hope that these judges appointed by previous administrations can rule in their favor. And so far, that hope has been working out for them. And organize these phony demonstrations. That's it. Now, there are people who are, I guess, upset out there, upset enough to ruin their Saturday for about an hour or two. But, like, as Jesse Waters pointed out, though, some of them, it just seemed like they were on the clock for an hour or 2 hours. And actually, that would be interesting. Consider this. The protests earlier this year seemed to last longer. There were no such comments about, half the crowd disappeared after an hour. That hadn't happened. So what we have here is possible evidence that all this defunding that the Trump administration has done of left-wing causes is having an effect. Now they can't afford to keep the protesters around long enough. Because earlier this year, they still had a bunch of money coming to them. Not all of it had been rooted out, or if any had been rooted out, it was all too recent, so they still had huge endowments for themselves. But now, after 6 months have passed, maybe we're starting to see the effects. Maybe these crowds that they were buying they can't afford the same kind of crowd that they used to have. They can't afford to keep them there so long. So the crowd just ups and leaves. Oh, shift is over. We're going to go home. Bye. You didn't have enough money now. And maybe this, the next No Kings protests, they'll only be out there for half an hour, just long enough to get some media coverage, long enough to get all the crowd shots, and that's it. Although, actually, this time it wasn't long enough to get the crowd shot, because that poor CNN reporter that they have out there, you gotta feel sorry for him. He wants this to be real, just as all the rest of the media does. He wants this to succeed, but then when CNN finally got to him, he just had to say, well, there was a bigger crowd earlier. Trust me, there was a bigger crowd earlier. That I don't know where they're at now, but there was a bigger one earlier, I promise. Poor guy. CNN's got to learn, though. You got to get to the protest when it starts. That crowd just isn't going to be there when you finally get around to it later, because they're not paid to stay there that long anymore. So maybe we'll see less and less of that by the next protest. Now, Democrats have been caught over and over again funneling government funds to various NGOs and other funds that they shouldn't be funneling to various organizations that eventually can be traced to these protesters. I mean, gee whiz, there was that, Fire Aid concert that they had for the Palisades fire. All the money was supposed to go help the victims of the fire. Instead, it ends up going to this, laundry list of left-wing organizations that had almost nothing to do with the fire, except perhaps one of them may have been based there, or one person who was a member of the organization that got $1 million was lived in that area or near it, and that was it. So Democrats just love to waste money. You think they're going to do that with their big Fire Aid concert for their celebrities and the wealthy established folks in the party. You'd know that they're going to do that with the government money that's coming to their organizations. So perhaps that they've been using this money to pay for these crowds, and all they can get now are the elderly folks. And actually, it was kind of there was a derisive term. One of the members of the media was talking about these protests. And she was saying how Q-tips showed up, but all they had really were Q-tips. And that was the media slang for elderly folks because they're white hair. And that's all they were able to get. So these No Kings protests, you get a crowd shot, it looks impressive. But then you look at what actually happened. They dumped hundreds of millions of dollars to try and organize this. A laundry list of organizations, 200 organizations, more than 200, got together to plan this. And all they could get was a handful of elderly people and a bunch of paid protesters. And half of them were gone within an hour or two of the protest starting. That doesn't sound like a very well-organized movement to me. That doesn't sound like a bunch of people passionate about something. That just sounds like stage dressing to give the media their story, which they happily ran with. Oh, look at all these protests against Trump. Now, you might also recall there was no indication of protests against Biden or the election. Where was the coverage of the Stop the Steal rallies? Where was the coverage of all the people in favor of Trump during the campaign protesting against the Biden administration? There were plenty of instances where Joe Biden or Kamala Harris, anywhere they landed, they were met by protesters. You didn't hear about that on the local news, but now you're hearing about, these No Kings protests as if it's a popular uprising against Trump, but half of them are paid and the other half don't even know why they're there, and then a small group are just there to advocate killing political opponents, and then they go riot later that evening. So it's not a very good movement that they have going on for themselves, but again, that's all they got. They've lost everything else. They're going to have to try and hold on to this. More Silk or Joshu after this break.
So there's really three factors that come into play that says exactly why mid-October is a great time to buy. So first, there's just more homes on the market this time of year. And so that means that buyers are going to have more options and more time to make their choices, and that they're going to see that sellers are more motivated to get out of the market and make a sale. Second, this is a time of year where there's less competition from other buyers. So there's just fewer buyers in the market, and that's going to mean that buyers are going to notice that, you know, there's less people to compete with. And then third, prices actually come down this time of year relative to other times of year too. So there's really a lot of savings to be had if you're a buyer who's fortunate enough to be in the market right now. And then get connected with a realtor on realtor.com. This is someone who knows your market inside and out, is going to be able to help you to guide your home search from start to finish. So for more information, you can go to realtor.com either through our app or our website. And if you really want to know more about why this is such a great time to buy, go to realtor.com/besttimetobuy.
Hi, I'm Christina Daves. I'm a lifestyle expert with some tailgate tips for you. So my go-to drink this tailgate season is Carbless, premium cocktails in a can. They have delicious flavors like pineapple and watermelon, and it's a woman and veteran-owned business. You want to stay hydrated and healthy on game day. So these are Sierra packets. They come from the Vitamin Shop, the leading destination for lifelong wellness solutions. You have electrolytes, and then you have your greens that are organic fruits and vegetables, probiotics, and fiber, so you feel great all day. And then you want to take your drinks. You make them at home. This is an insulated flask from High Camp Flask. This is a Fireflight version. It has two tumblers attached to it with a magnet, and these can be customized as well. So to get more tips like this, please go to my website at christinadaves.com.
The Medicare annual enrollment period runs each year from October 15th through December 7th, and it's an important time of year for the millions of Americans who already enjoy Medicare coverage. It's their chance to compare plan options for 2026. We know that Medicare coverage can be confusing. One thing I recommend to help navigate through the process is really focus on two things: cost and coverage. For cost, you want to consider things like the plan's premium, deductibles, copay or coinsurance. And for coverage, you should look not only at the medical coverage, things like hospital and doctor visits, but also prescription drug coverage and any extra benefits. The annual enrollment period runs from October 15th through December 7th. It's a great time to compare those cost and coverage of the plans available. Lots of options to consider for your Medicare choices in 2026. To help you navigate, I would recommend starting with a visit to MedicareEducation.com.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all gotta help each other right now.
We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're going to be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Sulker Joe Show. Everybody, co-host Joe with y'all here to this week. And thank you for sticking with us through this program. We are just now on the tail end of it. And while we wait for our guest, I will clarify a point that I was making in the last segment. Now, I mentioned briefly the banks and how some of the stuff that they were doing from 2008, they're doing again, but this time through third parties to try and hide it. It was the subprime loans. That's what they were doing. I don't know why. I got into my head there was something else and right in the middle of the segment, so I erased the accurate knowledge in my head with the inaccurate speculation as I was talking, because I tend to do that sometimes. But anyway, I always catch it, and that's why sometimes I sound like I'm saying something nebulous, because I'm like struggling in my head. No, this doesn't sound right. Why doesn't this sound right? It sounded right 5 minutes ago. Why doesn't it sound right now? Anyway, here are the notes, though. The banks, they screwed up the financial system with the crappy loans back in 2008. And now this time, they have oversight. To their credit, Congress actually did act to pass and fix the problems, unlike what we're seeing with the problem we were talking earlier this hour about over-reliance on one or two, well, I think it was four or five companies that for cloud services and technology services and stuff like that, where there is no such oversight. But the banks, they did get some oversight. So what did they do to continue these subprime loans? They just outsource the loans to groups that have no oversight. That's what I was talking about. That's the third party that I mentioned that they were going through. You know, instead of the bank itself taking the risk on the bad loan, someone else do it. And, you know, still the bank is taking the risk, but it's actually through a third party. So legally, it's A-OK. It's amazing how we have issues that come up. Legislation is passed to handle these issues. And, you know, it's a crisis. Everyone wants to destroy the banks or whatever. It led to the Flip and Occupy Wall Street movement. And what's the lesson that we learn? Oh, let's just keep doing it, but maybe through a third party so we can't directly be blamed. Congratulations. Darwinism in effect. So we might be on the path to a recession or something. But I mentioned that a year ago, before the election I was talking about. Well, I mean, before the election, we were already technically in a recession. The only reason we aren't on paper in a recession is because the Biden administration changed the definition of a recession. We encountered two quarters in a row of negative growth. That has been the definition of a recession since the word entered the language. And the Biden administration decided, well, you know, that's not actually the definition, because we have all these artificial numbers that point to otherwise. I think one of the other one of the numbers that they were pointing to was employment data. Didn't seem to bear out that we were in a recession, but the Biden administration's employment data was being inflated by immigrants and illegal immigrants who were getting jobs that Americans should have been getting. So, and some of these jobs just created to directly import these people. So they would not have been existing had it not been for the need to import these folks. So we were in a recession. It was just a budgeting tricks, just like the banks, you know, are doing what they were doing in 2008. It's just a trick of the paperwork to make it seem like they aren't. So that's what Trump inherited when he came into office. I mean, is it any wonder that under his guidance, we have more accurate numbers now and realize the economic crisis that we're in? It's not that Trump generated any problems. It's that he inherited them, that the previous administration was just covering them up. And they covered up so brazenly right in front of everybody, where it was on the news for a brief bit in the cycle, where we had, two quarters of negative growth, and now we're in a recession. We're not in a recession because we're changing the definition here. And then it's out of the news. Now everyone forgets about it. I don't even know if it was mentioned towards the tail end of the presidential campaign. And here we are, still muddling about with, but, you know, gas prices are getting better anyway. Food prices are getting better. Inflation is going down. And the Federal Reserve finally got around to cutting interest rates. That was something Trump was banking on for his strategy, that the Federal Reserve would cut some interest rates. And finally, they figured they got around to doing it. Bless their hearts. That might have been too little too late anyway, depending on what the Trump strategy is. We'll have to see. And as far as the tariff war goes, I mean, we have been raking in huge benefits from Trump's tariffs, even if we're possibly paying a little bit more for certain things that are imported, but that's just a sign that we should really be making the stuff here. You know, going back to the segment we had with Chris Orr earlier this hour about how we put all of our eggs in one technological basket, and that's how the Amazon cloud failure on Monday impacted everybody. Well, maybe not me, but, you know, I don't have an Alexa, and I'm a Luddite, and I was probably asleep during the worst of it anyway, but impacted a lot of people. And now we're seeing, you know, with this manufacturing and the tariffs and all that, perhaps that we've put all of our economic eggs in the export market or importing basket, in the basket of other countries, as opposed to ourselves. So diplomatic relations go south with one of these big distributors, suddenly prices go up. And then the politicians of the opposition party rave about, oh, you mismanaged this, and now we're paying more. Our voters are paying more. How dare you, blah, blah, blah. Basically, they're ceding control of the government to China in exchange for cheap goods for the people. That's not a good sign. And we saw how unreliable China can be as a trade partner. Remember, during the pandemic, suddenly we were going to have shortages of all these things that were made in China because China was hoarding some of it for themselves, and there were all these rules about COVID that were obstructing shipping, and we started feeling a bit of the suffering from it. And yeah, so we just should not put all our economic eggs in one basket. I was about to severely butcher and switch the letters around, but we are joined by our current guest about something else of pharmaceutical related, so it does dovetail a little bit with this idea about manufacturing stuff in China. Dr. Toby Watson, clinical psychologist. Thank you for joining the show. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Nice to be here.
Yep, nice to have you. So very briefly, you know, China, they manufacture a lot of our medications, so that's the segue I can give to go into your topic here. Now, the medications we have, though, we're starting to learn that maybe they're not all that they are cracked up to be. There are some major side effects. We got like 2 minutes left here, so what's your take?
And what we're talking about is psychiatric medications, and we use the vast majority of the world's psychiatric medications. In fact, we use about 90% of the world's Ritalin. It's not even manufactured here. And what we find is that, you know, 20% of our population, the youth, are taking a psychiatric medication. Half of the people they're saying is going to be psychiatrically, you know, ill at some point in their life. And we're realizing that it's just not working for us at all. And we need to stop taking so much medication and start coming down to the fundamental reasons why people are struggling and suffering.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, we'll have to leave it at that. But Dr. Toby Watson, appreciate you being on the show. I mean, is there anywhere our listeners can find out more about research for this? We got about 40 seconds left.
Absolutely. If you go to knowmoreaboutdrugs.org, you'll see Nancy Cartwright, voice of Bart Simpson, and myself giving information about medications.
All right, Dr. Watson, appreciate being on the show. Listeners, that was our show for the day. So you can go check out that website now or check out our website, mainstreetmedianetwork.com. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities, so please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.